Today is May 24th, 2018. What is your name?
My name is Randall Spare.
Where do you live?
I live on north of Ashland, about 2 miles.
And what's your occupation?
I'm one of the local veterinarians.
Okay. And how old are you?
I'm 57.
Okay. So when did you first become aware of the Starbuck fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire?
So I actually was working that day in Guymon, Oklahoma, and about noon, one of my office manager, Deb Fox, texted me and said there was a bad fire west of Ashland, Kansas. And so I didn't think much of it because it was so far away.
So when did you first find out that it was moving faster than what people first thought?
So at 3:30, or 3 o'clock that afternoon, she texted me back and she said Ashland has been evacuated. So that signaled to me that it was moving faster. And shortly after that, they evacuated the veterinary clinic and took the pets, 6 pets that were boarding at the veterinary clinic, to my barn 6 miles north of Ashland, or excuse me, 2 miles north of Ashland. And at that time, I had no idea about the fire that started 18 miles northwest of Ashland.
So when you were in Guymon, could you see the smoke?
I had no idea. I could. It was. It wasn't until I was actually on my way home about 5 o'clock when I went through Meade that I could see smoke in the east.
So did you have any trouble getting home? Did they stop you?
I knew a number of back roads, but I stayed on the highway knowing that if I needed to be diverted from Meade, that I could. But the last 10, 12 miles, I was going quite fast. So it had been hard to stop me.
So when you were on your way home, is that about when the fire from the north was coming down close to your property?
Actually, so by 5 o'clock, I learned that the fire was north of our house, and somebody had driven out to my house and said, Randall, your house is in quite a bit of danger, and they couldn't see 100 yards because of the smoke. And so I actually asked them, could you take those pets that we just took out there and take them back to Ashland and put them in your garage? Because at that time, I knew that Ashland was going to be safe, because the fire had turned out of the north. And as I drove up to my place, Mike Harden was pulling out from behind my house, and he had literally saved our home by within 100 yards by farming the pasture land behind my house to the north, to the west of my house.
Was anybody home at that time?
My wife had gone, left that day in mid-morning, and she'd was going to be gone for a few days, so nobody was home.
Lucky deal there.
Yeah,
so when you made it back home and found out where the fire was and that Ashland was safe, what type of action did you take after that?
So actually, I drove down the road to my neighbor, Dave Bozidon's place, and just to see how he was doing, because I'd talked to him several times on the phone, and I knew that his place was in danger, but I had no idea that. So when I drove down there 2 miles north of my house, his home was completely engulfed in flames, and there was no firemen, nothing around. And so I knew he was losing his home, and my pasture with our cattle were just east of his house in our pasture land. And I looked out there, and he was out euthanizing cows and calves of his own, because I knew he had lost a significant amount that were north of his house. So he was out putting cows and calves to sleep, and I drove through my pasture and looked at my cattle, and it was awful. And I didn't stay. I went and did some other things.
So the fire had already gone through your pasture?
Fire had already moved through the pasture. It was already, at that time it would have been almost skirting to the west side of Ashland.
So did you have any, we pasture that you had cattle on?
Actually, I had 80 acres of wheat that I had my calves, fall-born calves were out of wheat, and they were weaned, and there was probably 35 head of pregnant cows out there also that were safe, out of harm's way.
So when you left your pasture, and did you go back to town?
I drove up and down that road and went to town and actually picked up two cats at my place that are pets and put them in a pet carrier and carried them around with me for a while that evening. And I went back to town and I met somebody that needed to board their dog there because of their home being destroyed. Mm-hmm. So I took that dog in and I kept watching to make sure that my place wasn't destroyed, the fire didn't come back up, and there was still quite a bit of fuel that could have been burned directly north, a quarter mile north of my house, and I was concerned about that. But at that time, I was basically driving up down our road and also watching my Dr. Kellenberger's home to make sure, see if it was okay.
So did you spend most of the night, early morning, in town then?
Actually,
I
went into town a number of different times and checked on people and actually checked on somebody's pet that was involved with in an accident. And basically I started, my thought process was the coordinating of what we were going to do. And I probably went to bed probably 2 o'clock when I was exhausted and I went in the house and fell asleep. And then it was about 3:30 in the morning and the electricity was off and a car drove in. It was our son Mark that had driven home from Manhattan and brought a friend with him, and he came and stayed the rest of the week. He was in veterinary school and he chose to ask permission later, or ask for forgiveness and just come home. And he stayed the rest of the week and helped us out.
At the veterinary clinic?
He helped a little bit at the veterinary clinic. He helped us with our cattle, and he actually helped with some neighbors and just come alongside people.
So on Monday evening when the fire was still burning, were you starting to get calls from patrons yet? Or
actually,
did it wait Tuesday?
No, and a lot of people didn't call us. So when we woke up, got to the clinic early the next morning at 6, and by that time Dr. Kellenberger had driven home from, he'd been trapped in cold water, so we formulated a plan, and he went out in the country and took care of helping people assess their cattle operations and the cattle and what their particular needs were. And I stayed at the veterinary clinic and fielded calls and directed traffic. And it was at that time that we started calling people that we knew their operations were in harm's way. And people that may not ask for help. And so we felt it was our responsibility to field those just to check on people, because we knew where they were, we knew who they were, and how they would ask for help.
So, did most of your staff evacuate, and then had they return?
Well,
Tuesday.
Oh yeah, most all of them had returned Tuesday, and some of them didn't evacuate.
Yeah.
And I know that Deb Fox was there in Ashland really late, and she was used a wheat field south of town to be safe on, and so we by Tuesday morning, we'd all come back to town, and most of our efforts were all directed towards fire relief.
So did you have a lot of volunteer veterinarians come and help? Or?
Yeah, so on Wednesday, we had a lot of veterinarians call and ask what we needed, and our heads were still trying to get around the situation, what we needed to be doing, and by Wednesday, we were starting to get a few calls from people and say, could you help us, or I need some help here. So we actually had a veterinarian from K-State show up on Wednesday morning at about 10 o'clock, and he'd been out west speaking at a meeting, and he came by and said, "What can I do?" And just shortly before that, we'd gotten a phone call from an older lady who was worried about her husband, and they said, "Could you come and help us?" So I actually sent him out, and because he was an individual that had practiced. His father was a veterinarian, his grandfather was a veterinarian, and we knew he would know how to interact with people. And it was so hard to go out and see people's operations, and you knew that 90% of the cattle needed to be maybe destroyed, but some of them didn't look as bad as they were going to be in 3 or 4 days, because those cattle that were euthanized, put to sleep, their feet were going to fall off, their hoof walls, and they'd lost a lot of hair, and they weren't able to eat, or they were blind. And we knew that was going to be a progression, but our goal was just to put those cattle to sleep. In some places, we actually went out two or three times that week as the animals progressed. So we were there to help kind of come alongside people.
And so were you also involved in where they had to have the records before they could bury him and
take care of that stuff? We were in constant contact with the Kansas Department of Health and Environment, and we helped people understand that the things they needed to do were if, when they got ready to bury their cattle, were to have them counted to account for farm service payments for disaster relief, but to make sure that they were buried in a high place, not near water, and not more than 100 per head. And we are also in contact with people that owned excavators, and many people came in and volunteered and opened up those holes. And then we did some coordination with the county workers that had heavy equipment, and they helped cover up those holes.
So did you find yourself spending a lot of time on the phone, finding out regulations?
My phone time, I asked my office manager, Deb Fox, I said, what do I normally spend on the phone? And she said, normally I spend about 4,000 minutes a month. And I spent in March and April, I spent about 9,000 minutes a month on the phone. And so by Wednesday, the other thing that was starting to come in was people with wanting to bring hay, and we were coordinating some of that hay relief. People started calling about saying, I want to help out with some cattle. Had one gentleman show up on, I think it was Thursday morning, and said, I live in eastern Kansas, and I'd like to bring some cattle out. And I was thinking, okay, that's nice. We don't have any money, and we don't have any grass. I'm glad you want to bring them out. And he said, I'd like to give them to somebody. And I'm thinking, what do you want to give, two or three? No, I'm getting ready to wean my calf crop, and I'd like to offer them to somebody. So how many would that be? He said about 100.
Ooh.
So during the summer, we couldn't take them right away, and later in the summer he brought them out and donated to, I think, 40 or 50 head of heifers for an individual. So many people started calling us and asking us, we'd like to donate an animal here or there. We wanted to go to a young person, so we helped coordinate those donations of animals. And there was times that people wanted to donate something that probably wasn't useful, and we were kindly and gently and tactfully said that maybe you could sell that animal and just send us the money. We didn't need to be using non-virgin bulls or a Beefmaster or a Brahma bull that wouldn't do us much good in this country. So we spent so much time answering those calls and then actually calling people back when an 80-year-old rancher said, "No, I'm fine." We'd known he'd lost a lot of his ranch land. We'd call him back in 2 or 3 days. And some of them changed their mind. One story is, we found fire was on Monday, so Friday night, we heard of a guy just near where the fire started in down near Forgan, and that we do work for. And we said, "Do you need any hay?" "Well, I've got a little bit." "How are you getting along? How much did you lose? A lot of grass?" "Yeah, we lost a lot of grass." And just in a matter of by 10 o'clock that night, he'd had 4 or 5 loads unloaded at his place. And then we asked a gentleman out of Nebraska, said, "Hey, I'd like to bring a load of hay down." I said, "Could you take it to this gentleman?" And I said, "In a day or so after you deliver it, could you call him back and just see how he's doing?" Because we knew that a lot of times our pride gets in the way to accept help. And we wanted to encourage people to accept that help.
So when they were missing their pasture, they also probably had burnt fences. So where were they able to keep their cattle?
Well, it was a little bit like open range.
Yeah.
And so many of those fences, they started to put up some hot wires,
mm-hmm.
or they moved them to a part of the ranch that wasn't burned. Our neighbor to the north of us, he had 250 cows and he had 13 left. So he moved his virgin heifers. We moved those to a growing yard. And so people were also in neighboring counties and Comanche County and called and said, "Hey, I got some room for some cattle." So that was probably the first thing, that those cattle that weren't harmed, they were moved out of the way.
But they'd gotten out pretty quickly.
Yeah, I personally, it dawned on me on Tuesday night that I needed to find a different place for what I had left. So I called a client of mine that has a feed yard, and I said, "Could you take my cattle?" And before I could get it out of my mouth, he said, "Send them." So I called 3 truckers, and they moved the cattle and didn't charge them anything. And so many people that the vendors that we, our clients had done work with, were so compassionate. And probably the most challenging thing that we all did was accept help.
Yep.
Accept people unloading hay. And, yep. and all we could do was say thank you.
So on Monday, there were a lot of people that were using either 3-wheelers or their horses to gather cattle and happened to be in pretty heavy smoke. Did any of those horses that were being used by cowboys have trouble?
You know, I would say that the horses that had the heaviest trouble were horses that were exposed to the fire itself. But I don't know of any long-term detriment to any of the horses that lived through it without being burned. And that probably reminds me that, you know, the cattle were in 3 different conditions. Those that were alive and healthy, those that were dead, and those that needed to be euthanized. And many of those ranches lost 90% of their cattle.
Is that mostly in the western part of the county?
Actually, so.
Or all over?
There was 9 ranches that lost, I counted up the 9 ranches that lost 90% of the cattle. So it started to the north, mm-hmm. and it moved down south, north of Ashland, and then to the west and south of Ashland, mostly to the southwest. But there was 9 of those that probably lost 3,500 head of those cattle.
So most of the cattle, within a few days, you knew that they had to be either put down or weren't going to survive. What about some of the survivors? Are there some of them that are now showing?
Actually, those cattle that survived the fire, that didn't have any long-term effects, are okay. Now, even just today, I was on a ranch that had lost quite a few cattle, and I saw a cow that had a big scar on her back, and she had been burned and had a burn scar on her, but she was going to be all right, or she's all right. So most of them either were dead or needed to be euthanized right away. And those that lived, we haven't seen any long-term effects from it.
So any cows that were expecting calves during that time that survived, did they Were their calves born okay? Or
the calves were born okay, but some of those cows had burned their udders and couldn't produce any colostrum. So it was some of those calves that were actually orphaned. Mm-hmm. And there were some health effects from those, because there were times that those cows didn't give colostrum. And if they weren't right there to take that calf, then some of those calves had some health issues. It wasn't really from the fire.
Yeah.
But it was due to the fact that they didn't get good colostrum.
So were there a lot of calves that were orphaned and that were picked up and taken other places?
So I don't know that exact number, but I'm guessing about 200 of those calves. And yeah. There was a veterinary colleague of mine from Johnson that arranged for some calves to go to a Holstein heifer yard. And that worked out real well. They took great care of them and at no cost, and then people went and picked them up kind of when they kind of got things gathered up.
So most of them came back home?
Yeah, oh, all of them came back home. There was a project at Mead where those 4-H'ers took cattle in and calves in, and, you know, no one charged us for that cattle care at all.
So since you weren't here and your wife was gone and there was nobody actually at home, because all your kids are gone now too, so you didn't have any chance to really do any protection for your own place. You were kind of depending on neighbors and stuff, and they pretty much took care of everything.
We were at the mercy of God and our neighbors. And there was a wheat field a quarter of a mile north of our house that probably slowed the momentum of the fire down. And then we had mowed last summer west of our house just to knock some weeds down lightly. And probably wasn't the fuel available just immediately west of our house, but if it would have got any closer, it would have got into some cedar trees, and the way the wind was blowing, we would have suffered quite a bit of damage.
So you've lived out here for a long time, and you know what regular prairie fires or grass fires are like. How would you compare this to that? What was the main difference?
The main difference is it was so all-consuming. And one rancher said that it burned his 35,000 acres in 50 minutes. And whether it was prior, early in the day when the fire coming from the west, southwest, or the fire that had a 30 mile run and then blew south, both of those fires were so vast and there was so much fuel to be burned, and that was probably what made it worse, was so many of these ranches that had the greatest losses were the best stewards of their land, because they had left grass that had grown. And so the more grass that was there, the hotter the fire, the more fuel to burn. And what we're seeing now, 14 months later, is that we're seeing some of this grass it'll come back, but the crowns have been destroyed. And it'll take 3 or 4 years for it to get thick again. Yeah. So we'll have to be careful with it.
Although it has come back
absolutely
pretty well because of the rains right afterwards.
Right.
So did you lose a lot of pasture and fence and cattle yourself?
Yeah, I lost all but 6 acres or 10 acres of grass. Were all burned. And I think I counted up in all about 20 miles of fence that I had to either repair or replace.
So did you take advantage of the
cost share?
Yeah, and the KLA and the Community Foundation?
The Community Foundation was very helpful. The Kansas Livestock Association, Working Ranch Cowboy Association, and that fund was started by Farm Journal and the Buffett Foundation and a matching fund, and those all helped us obviously didn't heal us, but we're making so many of the people can be in business today.
That's true.
And I would say that the agricultural community throughout the United States came running to our aid.
Did you take advantage of the volunteers that came to help?
We had some
take
volunteers
care of your fence
early on to help pick up some of our fences.
Yeah, so Mark being here made it possible for you to go ahead and do different things for your customers and make sure everybody was getting along right. So he kind of took some of the load off you.
That's right.
And then he could do some veterinary things for you also.
Yeah. I mean, he did some assessing and euthanizing quite a few cows of our own.
So were they mostly shot?
Yeah. These cows were all shot by a gunshot. And after 3 or 4 days of that, shooting those cows at looked apparently healthy, that were chewing their cud, but their feet were falling off. Those were really, really difficult, and they started to wear on people that were doing that. So, and there's still pictures of piles of cattle put in one place and being ready to be buried in your mind that you'll never leave, but it helps us understand the enormity of the problem.
Was there a lot of wildlife that was burnt also? That had to be taken care of?
Actually, there was a few wildlife that were still alive that weren't killed, but lots of deer that we saw in pastures that didn't get out of harm's way. And you don't see them, but I imagine there was quail, birds. And one thing that was noticeable that week to 10 days after that is you just didn't hear any birds.
So when you were driving around that night and checking and making sure things were going right or better, did you notice the temperature change?
Oh yeah, by the time by 1 o'clock in the morning, the temperature was almost freezing, and it was so as time went along, the sun went down, and there was in my mind also there's a picture of fire, a ring of fire all the way around surrounding. You could look south, you could look north, east, and west, and there was just fire that was still remaining to be burning where there was fuel to be burned. It wasn't blowing. The wind wasn't blowing, but it was burning those areas that were down in the draws where there was a lot of dead timber.
What about the wind?
The wind had gone down, you know, maybe dark. It was in it, and it was more just out of the north and a little bit northeast. Because I remember there was some CRP north of my house that was, the wind was pushing the fire along, but it wasn't anything dramatic. And I knew I couldn't go to sleep until that fire was either put out or stopped, because if it got far enough west, it'd go down the ditch. And,
were you surprised when Mark showed up?
Oh, yeah. I
didn't think he was going to come.
I had no idea.
A great help, though.
Oh, yeah. He sacrificed hugely. He was in his second year, spring of his second year of veterinary school, and his willingness to enter in and be a part of it. And he brought a friend that stayed for 3 or 4 days, then he had to go back, and then somebody else, another one of his friends, came for the weekend. And
did K-State send down vets? Or did people come down from there?
Just individually. I had a veterinarian call me, email me on a Wednesday or Tuesday or Wednesday and said, I can't come this week, but next week I'm going to come. Can I come and help you out? I've got a skid steer, a trailer, and a pickup, and I'll do whatever I can. And he actually stayed with us the following week for a week, and he spent his time just unloading hay.
Yep. So on Tuesday, when you went back to town, what did the landscape look like?
It was so stark. It was so looked like the moon.
Yep.
Just when you looked up in these pastures, and there was nothing there. And it was as I look back in it, sometimes I didn't imagine the severity of it. It took 3 or 4 or 5 days or a week, 10 days for it to really sink in.
So,
and,
What's your most vivid memory of the fire?
The memory I have is when I was, I also had a feed yard manager from a feed yard at Montezuma call me up and said, hey, I'm coming over and I'm going to bring some food. And he showed up about dusk with some food and some water and a generator. And I remember driving up and down the road and driving, and he just wanted to be with me and was helpful. But I remember just the ring of fire as it was dark, and it was 11 o'clock at night, and there was fire in the draw west of my house, and there was some cedar trees that were, the fire kept coming into about a mile north of my house, and they looked like Roman candles going off when the fire hit them. And so that was, of that night, that was a surreal feeling, was the ring of fire all the way around us.
So how long were you without electricity at your house?
We probably were without it till Wednesday morning, yeah. Tuesday night.
So who were some of the people or agencies that were most helpful?
Actually, it's the people, the individual people that came to us. And there were some people that I don't even know who all showed up to help us individually. But me personally, some people from our church and me came and helped. And then once we kind of started to get our hands around it, you know, an agency, there was people from the Fish and Game that came and helped us euthanize cattle. Because we have to remember that we were trying to euthanize, but we didn't have any corrals to hold them in. Yep. And if we started to shoot something and we missed, they'd run off. So it was real important to be a good marksman. And that's why I stayed at home. I don't do guns very good. And
so when they're shooting, what do they have? A herd of 50 or more?
It might have been 50. It might have been 30. It might have been 10.
Yeah, just depending on what they found together.
Yeah.
And so did they take care of them where they found them?
Yes.
Because you couldn't really move them anywhere,
right? Some of these, it was easy the first few days when you found those that they weren't moving. They were completely burned. I have a vivid picture in my mind of a cow and a calf that were up near Mount Jesus. And that cow was standing over the top of her calf, and both of them were badly burned. And as we pulled up, the coyote ran away. And the coyote was burned. And so it was so hard to even euthanize cattle. But the people that came in helped us. And when it really all unfolded, one of the things that I had, the state veterinarian, Dr. Bill Brown, came to visit on Friday, that Friday evening, and then he said, I think I'll come back tomorrow morning. And I really didn't know his mission, but he had a purpose there, and he came, and he said, you can't keep this pace up. And he encouraged us to get a working group put together, and I called Kendall Kay on Saturday morning, and I said, Kendall, can you come down and listen? And at that time, so there was many people doing different things, and they were doing a good job of working together, but we knew we could work better together. And so he encouraged us to get a working group of about 12 people, and he showed us how to, on our phones, we could communicate with each other. So we got a meeting together that Sunday night at Gardner Angus Ranch, and then in that meeting we invited 12, but I think we had 18 people there, most of my staff, and we divided up all the responsibilities. Somebody would be responsible for the fences, somebody fence donations, and so hay and hay donations, and the money. We talked, people with the foundation were there, and we talked about how to handle money donations, and we talked about volunteers and volunteer housing and feeding the volunteers, and all those people got divided up. And so if people called us and said, you know, I'd like to give some money, we could send them to this person, or we could email them something immediately. If they said we wanted to have hay, deliver hay, we could send them here. And most of the cattle that were wanted to be donated were sent towards us. So we handled that. And because of Dr. Brown coming and saying, hey, make a working group, those people from our community that didn't own a cow, that didn't own an acre of land, they came and served animal agriculture, production agriculture, for weeks, tirelessly and selflessly. So our community banded together and helped one another out. And there will never be able to be a dollar figure put on that friendships and that sense of responsibility from our own community. Yeah. And I know there was many things that took place that I never knew about.
Right.
And I never will. Mm-mm. But it's how our communities serve one another.
So when you get everybody together, or when you think about it later, what's the emotional cost on the community from all of this? And how have we dealt with that?
You know, I think the emotional cost was tiring. But yet, when we as people serve one another, that's therapy, that's encouraging, that's seeing people succeed in the midst of difficulty, and that was energizing to me.
Yep.
Even though we had losses of our own, I just knew that God would provide, and that as we serve other people, that we would see them not just survive, but flourish in the midst of these difficult challenges. So there was people that would react different ways. And, mm-hmm. and I think that when calling back to check on people a month later, how you doing? So once they started to make a plan, ranchers need a plan. Mm-hmm. And once they had a plan, then they started to heal a little bit. You know, it rained a lot last summer after the fire until the 1st of August. And that was really encouraging.
Do you remember the smell of the fire for after the fire?
Not until you remember. Yeah, I remember the smell now. There was because I remember going to Dodge City like on a Thursday night for that basketball game. And I remember getting north of Mineola and said, it didn't smell up here. And it was something you became accustomed to and you didn't notice until you drove out of it.
Yeah. Talk about the basketball game. How was that helpful for the community?
Well, I think that was just took our minds off of it. And even those kids were worn out and they were spent and it was difficult for them. I think that was good for us to get out of town.
Get away. Yep. So what about the physical and financial effect that the fire has had on the community?
Well, and we're all very private people, and people don't talk about all their losses, and they will do it at different degrees and in different venues, but it has to be costly. And we know it. I know one ranch that's estimated their total losses was between $5 and $8 million. And one of the things that I see that those ranches, three of the largest ranches that had the most difficulty and the most challenge, their sense of otherness about fellow ranchers and their neighbors, and they helped one another out. They came alongside their neighbors, even though they were hurting. It's what can I do for you? And that level of service permeated other people. And there was never a time when I saw, even one time demonstrated, people felt, oh, poor me. And their willingness to continue to persevere.
Yeah. Can you perceive of anything positive that's resulted from the fire?
I think that working together as a family, as a community, I also see that those emergency preparedness people did a tremendous job behind the scenes, and there was very few times of people ever getting ouchy because somebody else did something out of pride or out of humility, and people were able to serve the best they could with the skills they had. And, you know, one of the things that I think our community did was serving one another. The emergency management people out of Topeka were surprised. They didn't have to give us near the amount of help. And I think that service to one another was so beneficial. And it was modeled.
Mm-hmm. So what have you done or can you do to prepare for another disaster, emergency, fire? And what has the community done?
Well, I imagine there's a tremendous amount of, even this year when we saw another fire on March the 5th, there was a very quick response to put that fire out. And I know the emergency management people have taken some more training and talked about what went on. I know the firemen have taken measures to strengthen their own efforts to get after a fire early. And they've used Oklahoma trucks a little more readily. But, you know, I think we as a veterinary community understand we can't do this alone. And asking people, when they ask us how can we help, is to allow them to come and help. And we think as veterinarians, we know the people in our community better than emergency management people from outside the area, and we can come alongside and help one another better than any sort of government agency.
So now you're involved in a lot of veterinary organizations or groups around the state and the nation. Have you been asked to speak about your what happened and how you handled it?
I've actually been asked to speak. I spoke at the American Veterinary Medical Association meeting, national meeting in Indianapolis in July. I spoke at an Academy of Veterinary Consultants meeting in August, and then Oklahoma Veterinary Medical Association asked me to speak at their annual conference. And in this fall, Mark Gardner and I will be sharing our story at a national bovine practitioners meeting about the relationship a veterinarian has with their clients and how indispensable we can be in a variety of ways. So it's been very humbling and honoring to do those talks.
So have you been getting some interesting questions about how this all unfolded and how you handled it?
I think that one of the things that as I start to give those talks that I think I'm doing pretty good. I think I'm doing okay, and then some of those emotions come back up, and some people said, it looks like I still have post-traumatic stress syndrome. In fact, one talk that Mark and I and Kendall Kay gave was at an Ag Summit meeting. And we each individually, we knew each other's story, but we never heard each other's story. It was during that meeting that it was the most emotional for me to see my friends and how they served and gave selflessly to others, as well as trying to manage their own chaos. And
do you feel like you've learned something from this that makes your veterinary clinic better and makes your practice and how you deal with your clients better?
Well, I think that's one of the things. It's all about relationships. Mm-hmm. Whether we're selling veterinary services or a bank and have money to sell or insurance, or it's still about relationships. And probably what's been cemented in my mind is the importance of those relationships. They can be leveraged at any time. Any challenges, we can come alongside and help people.
So how do you think our community has prepared better, or is prepared better?
I think that we as a community could handle a challenge like this again. I mean, we never ever want to, but we know that we can come together and manage that, and we know how to do it a little bit better.
Yeah. So do you have any other thoughts about this experience that you'd like to share? I have one for you. Michelle had some friends that wanted to...
She wants to come down and share that story sometime.
Oh, okay.
About
yeah.
her friends from Mineola.
Yeah. That.
And that's a whole other story, too. But she'd like to share that and how those people wanted to come and help us. And they... In another part of the county. So I'll let her... Do
okay.
that sometime.
Sounds good. So any other thoughts or things you'd like to share?
I think that sums up.
Okay. Thank you very much.